Forbidden Panel welcomes you to Panelcast, Forbidden Panel's weekly podcast featuring movie and comic news and reviews. And now, your hosts, AJ and Brian.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 97 of the Panelcast, On the Road to 100. I'm your host, AJ, and with me is Martin.
Hello.
This week, as we promised you, we completely lied to you, apparently, on the last Panelcast that Martin brought up, because he likes to point things out that make me feel dumb. We had promised that we'd be coming to you from the 100th issue release party from Four Color Fantasies, but instead we decided to jump in between, because there's some really cool news that's come out, especially in regards to what's coming down at San Diego Comic-Con. So, this week we will be discussing stuff coming out for that. We will also be talking about some new news that has been popping up all over the place. And Martin and I will be talking about the new release of The Crow. All that and more after this quick commercial break.
Forbidden Panel is currently looking for artists. If you or someone you know would like to join us, please visit www.forbiddenpanel.com.
And welcome back, guys. We're going to start off with some news going around the comic world. AJ, what do you got going on?
Well, this news story that I have right now is going to make Martin crack up throughout the entire time, so just bear with us on this. Marvel has recently announced its new relaunch of a bunch of different titles entitled Marvel Now. Honestly, I don't know how I feel about this. It looks like they're trying to rip down on DC's 52 and trying to get with that storyline. But recently, it has been announced, talking about the new Avengers. This is a quote coming from CBR. The most popular characters, the most acclaimed creators, the most ambitious stories, this is Marvel Now. This fall, the Marvel Universe heads into an exciting all-new direction as the industry's top creators join the top superheroes, Iron Man, Thor, Captain America, Hulk, Spider-Man, Wolverine, and more to deliver all new ongoing series, each beginning with issue number one. Marvel Now is the culmination of Marvel Re-Evolution, the groundbreaking new initiative to evolve the comic book experience through innovation. The first issue kicks off in October with Uncanny Avengers number one, from the superstar dream team of Rick Remender, who did Uncanny X-Force, Venom, as well as John Cassaday, who's doing Astonishing X-Men and Captain America, and it continues with the jaw-dropping new Marvel Now series nearly every week through February. Again, it just seems like they're trying to take on with a new DC 52 type thing and just relaunch everything. Though, again, I have to ask, didn't you guys do this with, you know, the Ultimates line? So I just don't know how I feel about it.
Now. Well, and there was this really interesting image that was released with it all that shows several characters from the Marvel Universe, but also shows like Jean Grey, who's currently dead. And it didn't redesign too many of the characters, but there are a couple that are interesting to point out. Nick Fury is still looking like Samuel L. Jackson, but now he's wearing that Steve Rogers costume that Steve Rogers wore when he was part of S.H.I.E.L.D.,
which again, running S.H.I.E.L.D. again is another awkward thing because, I mean, Nick Fury as Samuel Jackson is only in the Ultimates line and not in the current Marvel line that's still the old white guy, you know, that we grew in love from, what's his name, David Hasselhoff.
But now,
maybe
they're going to do a new universe, or they're just rebooting this universe so it looks similar across all of them. I don't know. It looks like Cyclops. I'm not sure who this is behind Wolverine, but he looks similar, or he looks different as well. He actually looks a little bit like Daredevil. He's wearing this really interesting red costume, and he's about to shoot his beam. I'm not sure. It could be Cyclops. It could be somebody else. We don't know. Thor's there. Cable's there.
I love how Wolverine doesn't look any different.
Yeah.
Neither does the Invisible Girl, much less Nova, or even Rocket Raccoon.
Yeah. And Captain America doesn't look all that different either. I mean, it looks like a pretty common costume. The Iron Man, it may just be the shadow that they're trying to portray, but his suit does look a bit different. There's a couple more lights on it now, and it kind of has a black tone to it. So I'm not sure if that's just supposed to be from the angle we're looking at or what.
Or
but
if
even
he's just
Thor
racist.
Looks Thor looks the same as well. So and Hulk is wearing some sort of armor.
Yeah.
I guess that's different.
Well, I mean,
Not
there's a
really.
lot of little news snippets that have been coming out about it. Let me run them down real quick. Marvel's anticipated post-AVX relaunch now having a name. Executive in charge Axel Alonso opens up on Marvel Now, from why Brian Bendis is ready for the X-Men to why this isn't the New 52. Plus exclusive art from X-Men, Avengers, and Academy, and more. Another tag states Marvel enthusiast Brett White is having a hard time figuring out which voice to listen to regarding Marvel Now, with his inner fanboy and adult comics fan debating the new initiative's pros and cons. Also, the cover of Rick Remender and John Cassidy's Uncanny Avengers 1, illustrated by Cassidy, has surfaced online, giving a glimpse of the team's lineup and costume revamps, which we already had just recently discussed. Another title that's been added to the ranks of Marvel's incoming Marvel Now relaunch, The Reborn New Avengers by Hickman and Steve Epting. Marvel Comics enters a new era in October with the Marvel Now initiative. CBR spoke with editor-in-chief Axel Alonso and SVP Publishing and executive editor Ton Verrout for details. You can check out CBR's website for that. Marvel Comics gets aggressive with their post-AVX relaunch as Marvel Now introduces 5 months of new series debuts, the return of the original X-Men, redesigned heroes, and more. Also, there's a new series with Brian Michael Bendis, Hickman, Remender, and more, highlighting Marvel's post-AVX plans as the Uncanny Avengers and other teams get relaunched. I have no fucking clue what they're going to try and do with this thing, but it really sounds like they're just reaching for something. Something to, like, either apologize for what AVX is doing, or trying to say, hey, we do have original ideas and new storylines, so here we go. Or it could be the opposite factor. It could be we can't think of anything else new or any new cool villains to redo. So how about this? Let's relaunch the Marvel Universe. That way we can bring back Doc Ock and all those motherfuckers that have died before and reuse them somehow. It'll be awesome because it's now. Like, I don't understand what's going on. And I say all this now, but knowing me, when the first books come out, I'll pick them up and I'll read them. I'll be like, oh, this is kind of cool. I like it. And, I'll be chewing on my foot, but still. For the time being, I don't know what to think about this.
Well, the thing that is interesting to me, it's October. So September was DC's month to do this, and they're doing this whole marketing campaign over at DC to reinvigorate the New 52. They're gonna release zero issues for all the books. They're gonna release a couple new books. They're gonna be putting out all the trade paperbacks as we start to get to the 12th issue of a lot of these books. So there's gonna be a lot of press going on for DC. Are people really gonna go to Marvel as like seconds, like sloppy seconds, or why go in October? I know that they have the AVX line going on, but why not launch it sooner, especially if it's not gonna have anything to do with AVX? It's gonna be a relaunch or a reboot or whatever.
See, the problem that they don't understand is that while they're so busy competing with each other, they don't realize that it's the fans that take the hit. They're taking stuff that we've known and grown up and loved, and they're changing them and screwing it around. Now, sure, it may be in a re-effort to reinvigorate the comic book genre out there, get new fans in or what have you, or maybe get fans that aren't familiar with comic books that have now seen all these movies, and get them to now pick up the new Avengers or what have you so that they don't feel so lost and confused. And also gaining new fans at the same time. I kind of get that. But you're screwing over all those old fans that have been with you for 20, 30 years, by keep changing this up. It's hard to keep track now. It's hard to realize, because sometimes you change characteristics about certain characters that we enjoy. I love Wolverine, and now he's like this, and now I no longer like him because you made him a bitch or something. So I don't know whatever it is they're trying to do. It's obvious that it's not the fans that they're thinking of. And I think that's where the problem lies. So there you go.
Yeah, it'll be interesting, and there's so much else going on before we even get to the fall that I'll handle this in the back of my head for now, but this won't be a big thing till we get there, because I want to see what these zero issues from DC are going to look like. I'm more interested in a lot of the books coming from other publishers. So yeah, and I'm reading Avengers versus X-Men. I don't want to find out that they did Avengers versus X-Men and then it was just pointless and stupid, you know.
What do you, you know, we'll touch the base on Avengers versus X-Men and our thoughts about it later on the podcast, but
Yeah.
yeah. Anyway, What else have you got? What do you got?
Well, Spider-Man was a big part of our last podcast when we were at the theater waiting to see the film, and then afterwards when we finished it. The film is doing well. As of Friday, it was at $95.7 million for its 4-day, which doesn't really mean much in terms of box office because they typically only count opening weekend as Friday, Saturday, Sunday projections. But for it to have this long holiday weekend, they are looking for it to make $135 to $140 million. Nowhere near an Avengers opening or things like that, but for a new franchise or a new start on this franchise, it seems to be doing well.
Well, you know, deservedly so. There's a lot of people out there that are complaining about the new Spider-Man, especially a lot of the actors that have starred in the original. I wouldn't say original, but, you know, in the last series, complaining that, you know, oh, no, ours was better and blah, blah, blah. And a lot of fans, diehard fans, are having problems getting behind this one as well. But I don't know. We'll see how it pans out. I kind of dug it and I liked it for what it was. So, yeah, I wasn't too disappointed with it.
Well, I thought it was really interesting. We were talking to somebody when we were in line for Savages on Thursday who was waiting to see Spider-Man, and they were saying they were talking about how they were excited to see it and what they'd seen on TV looked interesting, but they were wondering if it was really going to be good because there weren't a lot of people in line with them. And granted, they were seeing a late showing of it, but they were excited about seeing it, and they seemed like newer fans, not necessarily maybe they were into Spider-Man all that much or that they had seen that, you know, a couple of them were younger, so maybe they hadn't seen the original Tobey Maguire one in theaters, so this was a way of seeing it a different way. And so there seems to be a lot of new fan excitement. I know you were mentioning that the older fans are starting to come out of the woodworks a little bit and talk about it as they're starting to see it. But I liked it, and I thought that it was really good, and I've grown up with Spider-Man.
Right. I mean, I'm still reading Spider-Man now, so now.
Now.
Now. So, I mean, you know, again, like you said, I grew up a fan of Spider-Man. I love Spider-Man. He's one of those characters that you can just, you know, get behind and whatnot. So seeing this new version of Spider-Man, I didn't have a problem with it. It just felt like, I don't know, just felt like something new, which, again, like, is complete opposite of what I just stated about, you know, the relaunch of Marvel Now and how that's kind of crapping on those old fans and whatnot. In the movie world, I don't see a problem with it because in movies, they've never, ever, ever, ever gotten it right. It has never actually been based verbatim on any one storyline. So seeing this reimagining of the Spider-Man movie, it's what do we have to compare it to? We can't compare it to the comic books because, you know, they've never gotten it exactly the way it should be. So we have only the other movies to compare it to. And in my mind, those mediums are not the same. So, you know. Take that, Marvel Now.
Now.
Now. Moving on. A set of posters has been released this week. Three posters, to be exact. And one of them has me, like, Martin and I were discussing this off mic earlier, just super, super seriously excited about this movie. As much as I was kind of excited about it previously, now I'm just even more so. And that is the poster for Guillermo del Toro's Pacific Rim. You can head over to Forbidden Panel right now. It should be like one of the first things you see. The poster shows a big battle mech and Charlie Hunnam and Rinko Kikuchi sitting on the shoulder of the battle mech. And it's just impressive to me. It looks really awesome. But along with this poster came a little blurb about what the movie's about, something that we didn't have before. Let me go ahead and read that to you right now. Now, when legions of monstrous creatures known as kaiju started rising from the sea, a war began that would take millions of lives and consume humanity's resources for years on end. To combat the giant kaiju, a special type of weapon was devised, massive robots called Jaegers, which are controlled simultaneously by two pilots whose minds are locked in a neural bridge. But even the Jaegers are proving nearly defenseless in the face of the relentless kaiju. On the verge of defeat, the forces defending mankind have no choice but to turn to two unlikely heroes, a washed-up former pilot in Charlie Hunnam and an untested trainee, Rinko Kikuchi, who are teamed to drive a legendary but seemingly obsolete Jaeger from the past. Together, They stand as mankind's last hope against a mounting apocalypse. So basically, it's Godzilla meets Real Steel, is what I'm hearing.
Yeah, and that's kind of what it looks like. For all the promo images and things that have been coming out, it looks, Guillermo del Toro was saying the other day that he was trying to keep this one really close to his chest with the story and details and things like that. But he wasn't doing the Cloverfield thing where we didn't really know what was going on going into it. And so now promotional images have started to come out. He's talked a little bit about it, and it just looks cooler every time something else comes out about it.
Right, and I'm excited to see any kind of trailers or footage or what have you that they're going to have at Comic-Con, because they're not going to let this one go.
No. And this is one that I think will need a lot of promo at Comic-Con as people are just starting to hear about it. On our level, you and I are just seeing a poster for this. It seems like something that needs to build up a little bit more.
Right.
And so they're going to have to get the rest of the con world out there into it. And then from there, hopefully their word of mouth will get everybody else going into it.
Now, the other poster that's come out this past week, actually, there's been two versions for this movie, and that is The Hobbit. The first one shows a picture of Hobbiton and Bilbo Baggins' house, surrounded by, the Shire and all the greenage and foliage and everything. It looks really gorgeous. The second one shows Gandalf the Grey walking down the path. Both of them are just visually striking and somewhat calming, when you look at them. They're just so beautiful that you just can't imagine, smog busting out and fucking people up. So, what is your take on these images?
I actually agree with you. I think that after seeing Lord of the Rings 2, I can envision this big epic adventure tale, and you know where they're going with this story if you have any recollection of the original book, and so you kind of know what's gonna happen. And then you see these two posters where it's just like calm, simple, you're gonna start watching the film and be excited for seeing Hobbiton and think, oh, we're in this cool town, and then it's going to go someplace, maybe not dark necessarily would be the right way to say it, but like it's going to go on this adventure, and there's going to be characters that die, and a lot of us know that Lord of the Rings, happens after this, and so we know there are people who are in this one that aren't in the next one, and then vice versa, there are people who are in this one that are in the Lord of the Rings trilogy, and so it'll be cool to see that as well.
Now, do you think that due to the resurgence of the Lord of the Rings trilogy that came out, a few years ago, that it caused some fans or some new fans to go back and read The Hobbit, reread The Hobbit, so that it's fresh in their mind? So do you think that with The Hobbit coming out now on film, that not only does it have to contend and live up to the fact of just how great the Lord of the Rings was, but also the fact that the resurgence of these movies have caused fans to reread the books? And so it's fresh in their mind. Do you think it's going to have problems on that aspect?
Absolutely. I think how Harry Potter and there have been people who talked about Harry Potter and the Hunger Games most recently, who say, oh, the book was so much better. Even Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter is another one. People read the book, they go into these movies, they're expecting the book. I think you're right on saying that people went back now, they read the Lord of the Rings trilogy, they've probably read The Hobbit, they're going to come into this expecting things from the book. And I didn't hear it last time, and I don't think we'll see too much of it this time around either, that there was differences from the book. There was this that wasn't in the book or was in the book but wasn't in the movie. I don't think it'll be as heavy a thing, but I do think there will be people who have more knowledge about The Hobbit going into it.
Right. I mean, there's a complete character left out of the movies that was in the books. So.
And so it'll be interesting to see how what they say about that.
Now, the third poster that's come out already, and it's not really a poster, it's kind of a teaser right now. And that is showing Henry Cavill as Superman in the new Man of Steel. And it just shows him with his fist up and a coming soon stamped across it. Now, Martin and I were discussing earlier, we don't think that this may be the actual poster because it just looks like a re-edit of an image from The Immortals. But still, it's got to bring forth some resurgence in the character and excitement for the movie to come out. What do you think?
Like you and I were talking about before, it doesn't look like a poster, a new poster for it. I'm hoping it's not the poster for it because this is not the image to be showing to people. It's Superman. He looks like he's in the middle of a fight and he's getting ready to punch something. But this is starting Superman over. You want to start Superman over, and from the people who started Batman Begins, and they started Batman over with that, you're expecting more. So the first poster that came out for this movie was just the new symbol, which people have already taken in. They've griped about it. They've praised it. Other people are worried that this is going to ruin Superman again and things like that. And so now we get the second poster. It's going to have to be something more than him about to punch whatever he's about to punch.
But in that statement in itself, it's already better than the remake that recently happened, or the continuation of the story that recently happened with Brandon Routh. Because in him taking the first, that punch right there, shows more fight scene than it did in that film.
It does show more action from it, but there's a lot of stories coming out about this movie's going to take have a lot of time on Krypton. They're bringing characters that were in the Superman 2 back in the 80s, and so it's is this a you know how far from the other Superman movies is this going to be? It is definitely looking grittier than Superman Returns, but I still can't think that we can judge it as better than Superman Returns already.
I can already see a drinking game coming from this because the minute you mention Krypton, all I can think of in my head is lens flare. So the new drinking game will be anytime you see a lens flare, take a shot. Remember I said that, people, because at the end of the night, you're not going to remember shit. So, yeah, so what other stories do you have, Martin?
The other thing I want to talk about was RoboCop, the remake that's happening next year, 2013. The first viral video for it made its way onto the internet. And probably last night, it was more broadened today. It's posted on ForbiddenPanel.com if you'd like to check it out. But the OmniCorp, who's responsible for the technology behind RoboCop, posted information. It's basically a promotional video for their products that are going to help protect the citizens of the world. And it's things like the flying drone, which is the XT908,
And the Ed 209.
and then the ED-209, which we already know about and looks similar from the first movie, but looks a lot shinier, in my opinion, for this time around. And then they tease the RC-2000, which becomes obviously RoboCop. And they don't show anybody in the suit. They don't show too much of the suit. They show bits and pieces of it, the side, the chest, a little bit, if you can make it out, but not too much in detail for it. And then they have this whole website built around that promotional video where you can join community watches and be involved as part of their company and helping them develop this technology and get around. And then in the very top right corner of their website, there's a live news feed that you can't click on or open too much further, but shows Detroit in chaos and rioting and obviously in
Chicago
crime
right
going
now. I
around.
got,
Oh, you got Chicago. It was
yeah.
Detroit when I was on it earlier today. So it looks like they're going around the world. They're going to be showing these different towns and the why they need to roll out all of this information.
That's very exciting. I like all the, as we were saying before, it's very new and shiny stuff, but they're showing the specs on the RoboCop suit right now that I'm watching, and I'm very excited about it. It looks really, really awesome and intense. So, yeah, I mean, they're basically taking a page from Prometheus as far as their viral marketing goes. And trying to make it look like an actual company, much like they did with District 9, look like an actual company. These things are actually happening right now. It's asking you to suspend your disbelief and believe that you're in this timeline that this is happening. Well, I'm looking at the ticker right now, and it's showing San Francisco, rioting happening in San Francisco. So it's all, really cool.
Yeah, and it seems like they're going to launch a very big viral campaign for this. It'll be interesting to see what, if anything, shows up at Comic-Con this week, because that's usually the big platform to start launching something like this.
Right.
But I don't know that they're ready. I haven't seen any word on filming or anything from sets like that. Just words that Gary Oldman, Samuel Jackson are signing on. Hugh Lowry from House is signing on. So as we start to get casting news, hopefully we'll start to see more. But it's very cool to see a video already out there. I'm one of the first questions that came from looking at the video, though, is RoboCop going to be CGI'd, or are they going to have Kinnaman wear an actual RoboCop armored suit? How are they going to play that out? And so if they can make this video and most of it looks CGI'd and created, are they going to CGI RoboCop?
I don't know. That'd be very
So,
interesting to find out.
yeah.
All right, moving on. One last little bit that I have here. Proving once again just how much of a cool guy he is, Ron Perlman participated in a Make-A-Wish Foundation wish from one of the children that were part of the organization. They had asked to meet and hang out with Hellboy And so Ron Perlman, of course, obliged. He went and got suited up again in the Hellboy makeup and went and hung out with the child. And there's many pictures and whatnot showing up there of them just conversating and all that. And apparently, eventually, the kid himself went ahead. His name was Zachary. Went ahead and he got Hellboyed out himself. He had the, the top knot on, the little sawed-off horns on, everything. So.
That's a really cool story, and it's cool just for the fact that Ron Perlman went and did this and was a part of it. But we've all heard Ron Perlman complaining about having to sit in the makeup chair to put that all on. So for him to go and do that after he's always said how much trouble it is to go and put it on and then go do it, you can really tell that he wanted to be a part of this and make this kid's wish big.
Right. And even on bleedingcool.com, where I'm reading the news right now, the guy even states, hey, if your mom or dad happens to read this, I'd just like to say how superb it is that you didn't want to meet Superman, Spider-Man, Batman, or Iron Man. You wanted to meet Hellboy.
Yeah.
Which shows that his parents actually, don't follow mainstream comics. Even though nowadays, Hellboy is kind of mainstream, but still. That's who he wanted to meet, and Ron Perlman was more than happy to oblige the kid. And kudos to Ron Perlman and Zachary, we hope you get better because that was an awesome wish. And even if it was an awesome wish, we just hope you get better. But yeah. Anything else you got?
Nope, I think with that we should take a break.
Cool. Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll get into some more stuff.
Guys, this is Daniel Corey. I'm the founder of Danger Cat Creative Studio, and I want to tell you real quick about my upcoming comic, Moriarty, The Dark Chamber. It's about Professor Moriarty, the arch nemesis of Sherlock Holmes. I'm working with artist Anthony Diachidua on it, letterer Dave Lampier. Please go to dangercat.com and check it out. That's DangerCat.com. And please go over to Kickstarter.com. We're running a campaign right now to try to raise funds for the production of the book. So, shoot us an email, let us know how you like it, and we'll see you on the web.
And welcome back to episode 97 of the Panelcast. In this segment, we're going to go ahead and talk about one of the biggest extravaganzas that's going to be happening just, what, 4 or 5 short days away. And that would be the San Diego Comic-Con. Every year, the San Diego Convention. San Diego closes down its Gaslamp District and opens it up for all us comic book geeks. And we oblige them by taking it over completely and ruining all the citizens' lives. So this year, so far, they've released a whole bunch of programming information and a bunch of outside information and a whole lot of news about what's going to happen there. So for that, I will toss it over to Martin, who's been doing all the research on it. Martin?
Yes, Comic-Con is going to be bigger than ever. And they say that every year. It's going to be bigger this year. It's going to be bigger. It's going to be the biggest year ever.
Well,
This year, I think it's actually true.
Comic-Con's one of those few things that like actually lives up to it because it's true,
Yeah. Well, one of those, I've always seen it as it's had more going on, but not necessarily bigger. It always seems like the crowd is just crowded. It's always packed that way. This year, I feel like it's going to be crowded and then some. One of the big things that's going on with Comic-Con this year that's been happening and kind of grown in popularity the last couple years has been off-site events. So there's everything going on at the convention center inside with panels and screenings and the exhibit hall floor and all that kind of thing, but you have to have a badge to get in to go do that. Well, then they were running out of spaces for booths, and people didn't want to pay all that money to have a booth there. To get a panel was hard. And so these cable companies, the studios, they all decided, no, we're not going to deal with Comic-Con. We're just going to go do our own thing and rent our own space outside of the convention center. And so every side of the convention center will be surrounded with activities this year. The Warner Brothers Studios is going to have their what they're calling the extra stage, and it's going to have celebrities. They're going to do movie screenings. They're going to have 6 Batmobiles there, a Batcave, freebies being thrown out, and things like that. Out in front, NBC is going to have one of these little carnival-style things set up. There's a couple other studios doing a similar, throwing up a couple canopies, and they're going to have an event. There's a food truck festival going on. The entire Gaslamp has restaurants that get taken over. And it's all of these events happen outside and offsite, in addition to the hotels nearby, their ballrooms being used for official panels and non-official panels. So all of these events are going on. Things that are not inside the convention center don't take a Comic-Con badge to get in. And so all of these people who are so upset that they're not going to be able to get in, they weren't able to buy a pass, and they complain and complain and complain. If they don't live too far away or they don't care about getting to the convention center, they can get just as much swag and celebrity-ness outside at off-site parties, off-site events, screenings, all of that stuff outside the theater.
Is celebrity-ness a real word?
I don't know, but it sounded cool in my head.
As did your voice cracking.
Yeah, that never sounds cool in my head. But one of the things that I really worry about in prepping for San Diego Comic-Con is the crowd this year. I think it is going to get bigger. We have 150,000 people that will probably be coming down to the convention center to participate in the con. And then now all of these studios and event centers and places saying, hey, you don't have a badge, still come down and hang out.
Right.
So how many more thousands of people are we going to see to take that over and already have to fight with? I mean, with the con attendees, it's such a battle just to get into restaurants, to get on the trolleys, to find hotel rooms, all that sort of thing. So now we have this additional group of people that will be coming, hopefully for a positive outcome. Hopefully it'll be great. Hopefully these outside events will be awesome. And this will be another way to expand the convention experience without them having to worry about, selling tickets for $400 in order for people to attend. This will be another way to do it. The other big news is all of the panels scheduling has started to come out and who's coming and who's going to be appearing. As we were talking about earlier in the podcast, these three posters have been released for the Warner Brothers panel. Lionsgate has been making a lot of announcements about their handouts and swag and things that they'll be having. Hasbro and Mattel have all released their toy exclusives. Comic-Con International released pictures of the official t-shirts that will be happening. So there's a lot of announcements coming out right now, and it's going to be a huge event, as it always is, and it's going to be the event of the summer for all sorts of updates on movies, comic books, toys, everything.
Are you
With that, I
excited?
think definitely this is AJ's spot to start plugging the website.
No. Forbidden Panel is not going to have anything to do there. We're just going to be hiding out, you
Well, for those of you who are interested, I'll be posting a lot of my posts through ForbiddenPanel.com.
You're going to want to check out ForbiddenPanel.com throughout the
Yeah,
con experience because
definitely
we're
be
going to be
staying in
posting
touch.
stuff on a nightly basis. We're going to be broadcasting episode 100 live from the Comic Con, with bringing you lots of interviews and photos and all kinds of stuff that just like we normally do. I mean, if you've been a fan of Forbidden Panel for a while, you know how we do, you know how we roll. So, just expect the best when it comes to coverage of Comic Con. We're going to have operatives all over the place throughout the event.
What are you most excited to see?
Me, I'm most excited to see, I don't know what to say. Dinner, actually. I'm most excited about the Forbidden Panel dinner.
Yeah, that's always very cool.
On Wednesday night, the first night of Comic Con, Forbidden Panel will be, we'll be doing a little tradition that we normally do. It's been 5 years running now. What we do is we go to the Gaslamp Strip Club in downtown San Diego, the Gaslamp District, and we make reservations for about 20 people at this restaurant and invite all of our friends and family and fans to come out and kick back and just have dinner with us. This year is no different. It'll be at 8 p.m. that we have reservations for. We'll be sitting there well on into the night, just hanging out, eating some great food, conversating and asking people about their expectations for con for that week. So if you are in the neighborhood, if you have plans to come out to con and you don't mind us being sloppy, come on by and hang out with us. It should be pretty awesome. That's normally what I look forward to every year, because it's just a lot of fun seeing everybody, all the different people from all over the world and what their expectations are and what their plans are for a con. And it's kind of like a good place to make a game plan for the whole week. So it's lots of fun. So if you can, like I said, try to make it out because you don't know what you're missing until you've been there.
And it's definitely the way to start the week. I gotta say, after last year's dinner, we had a lot of fun at the dinner. The food is amazing. And then we're going into this 4-day stretch of just nonstop movement, and well, not necessarily movement because we do stand in line a lot, but you're nonstop for 4 days in Geek Mecca. And so it's nice to sit down with like-minded people and have this chit chat. And it's a lot of fun. So check it out if you can. The other thing that I think is going to be big about Con is the exhibit hall floor. I think we're starting to get back to a point where the bad economy is no longer an excuse about the swag, the toys, the what's being handed out, what's available, and things like that. That floor is always packed, always crowded, and always full of excitement. There's always something going on there. And I think this year is going to be the year that we see bigger presentations, newer technology for toys and things like that. There's this motion poster that's supposed to be coming out for Judge Dredd,
which has already scared the crap out of Martin at least once a day.
At least once a day. Not once. No, I'm still scared of this poster. But it looks cool, and the idea of it is cool. And so it seems like the studios are starting to put an effort into it. The comic book companies are putting an effort into their panels. They're going to be doing a lot of signings. And Comic-Con International itself is helping to organize and balance out the crowds a little bit more so that there's not as much traffic. You can still move around, but there's going to be lines to get into signings. There's going to be lines to get swag. There's going to be lines to get the toys. And as long as you can handle that, it'll be a fun experience. I think the exhibit hall floor is going to be a big part of it. The panels, obviously, with the news and the announcements and things like that will be great. But the exhibit hall floor is also another way to get sights of new action figures, play the new video games that are coming out, see trailers for movies that are going to be coming out over the next year and things like that. So it's cool to go out and experience it. And a lot of these booths nowadays are interactive. One of the announcements that came out this weekend was for the Indiana Jones Blu-ray release, they're going to actually have the scene where Indy falls into the pit of snakes for people to sit and take pictures in. There's no exact story is whether or not it'll be real snakes. Some people are debating if it's real snakes. Other people are debating if it's going to be fake snakes. I'm sure PETA will have a problem if there are real snakes in the exhibit hall floor for geeks to be around for 4 days. But it sounds really cool.
I think that you will have a problem if there are real snakes in the exhibit hall.
I actually don't have a problem with snakes. I think I'll be okay. As long as I stay away from that Judge Dredd poster at the Lionsgate booth, I'll be okay. And so I want to take a picture of it. We saw Game of Thrones had the picture booth at WonderCon this year where you could have your head put on a spike. It was a green screen photo thing. Those have become very popular. So I think we'll see a lot of those as well on the exhibit hall floor. And all of that is a whole other experience in addition to panels.
Right.
So it's really cool to be a part of that. Real quick, if I can go over a few little tips for surviving, if you don't mind, AJ.
I don't mind at all.
I tend to put these out occasionally, and I did a little panel on them at a con not too long ago. And some of the things to just tell people who may have not been before or people who aren't ready for the crowds we're about to face, the big things to remember are prepare. There's a lot going on off-site and at the convention center. The schedules are available online for everything happening at the convention center, panel-wise, exhibit hall, open hours, things like that. So visit comic-con.org to check out the schedule there. Another website to check out is sdccblog.com. They have all of the offsite parties listed conveniently and in chronological order so that you can find them all and see them all. So if you want to be attending the things offsite, you can see those there. And check out what you can online. Find out as much information before you arrive there. This will save you a lot of time. The other thing to remember is you're going to need patience. I don't know if you got to start practicing in your head, doing mantras, whatever it is, but you're going to be standing in line. There's going to be a lot of people. Be ready for that. You got to be thinking those things through before you arrive down there. Cash is king. That's another important thing to remember. If you're going to be buying things at the convention center or around, cash will be much more helpful, much more useful for the vendors. A lot of them don't take credit cards yet. As Square becomes popular, PayPal becomes popular, it might be possible. But that doesn't mean that it's the only thing that they'll take. So make sure you bring cash just in case. Same thing goes for eateries and things like that. There's a lot of places that have little carts that you can walk up and get food from. Cash works better than using a credit card machine. Don't expect internet to work or cell phone service to work the best. Be prepared for that and how to handle that. 5-2-1 rule. I talk about this a lot with people who attend cons. The 5-2-1 rule is very important for not just yourself, but for everybody around you. Get 5 hours of sleep a day, 2 good meals, and 1 shower every day. That's an everyday 5-2-1 rule to follow. Make sure you follow that, please. Not only for your sake, but for my sake, I don't want to smell your shit. Straight out. And deodorant is also your friend. That's another big one. And that's what I'll end it with. Please use deodorant. Do not use a whole can of Axe body spray when you're walking around in there. That smells just as bad as your BO.
Hey, Axe is my friend.
Use it conservatively, and it'll be okay, but make sure that you do something for hygiene purposes. We don't want everybody to be smelling up the joint.
Did you just say doo-doo?
I don't know. I don't think so. I think that was just in your head. But that's all I have for Comic-Con. Anything else you want to add?
Now, there's one thing that everybody needs to remember when it comes to Comic-Con, and that's know your location, A. Keep an eye on, you know, what's above you. There's signs above you that have numbers on them to tell you what aisle you're in. You're going to get separated from your friends. It's bound to happen. There's nothing you can do to prevent it. The minute that they see something cool, they're going to wander off. You're going to get frustrated with waiting for them, and you're going to continue on, or vice versa. Know where you are at all times. That's one. Two, designate a meetup area. Say, hey, okay, so if we get separated, cool, at 3 o'clock, let's meet in front of Hall C, or let's meet over here, or vice versa. You don't want to get stuck out there alone. Trust me on this one. Comic-Con is not the place where you want to be by yourself. I've done it. It's not fun. It's just too much. It's too hectic, and it's just... you just don't want to do it. Always have a buddy with you because the buddy system is going to save your life. Another thing, always bring water. Always carry the water on you because the water that they're going to charge you for there is ridiculously expensive.
Or bring a reusable water bottle because they do put those fountains around if you can handle the tap water.
Right. And the other thing is Bluetooth headsets, man. Those things will save your life. If you want to maintain contact with your party, figure out where they are, what's going on, vice versa. You're going to want to have, constant access to your cell phone. You can't hear a phone ring on the floor of con. You just won't hear it. Trust me, you won't feel it vibrate, anything like that. I bring a Bluetooth headset. Sure, I look like a pretentious jerk, but at the same time, I know where my friends are, and I'm not all lonely. So, because you never know, man. How many times have we been on the floor, Martin? It's been like, dude, you need to come over here now because so-and-so's signing. You know, or so-and-so is giving away this for free, or this booth is doing this, or what have you, vice versa. So you want to make sure that you have either a cell phone you can hear, you keep your phone near you, either on your chest or on your neck or something, or in a holster like Martin has, or you just have your Bluetooth headset on you so that way you can hear when your phone goes off. Believe me, there's a lot of things that go on Comic-Con that aren't in the schedule. Random sightings, random showings up. Man, I got my picture taken with George Romero one time, and he wasn't even anywhere on the schedule. And sitting right next to George Romero was Robert Englund and Stone Cold Steve Austin. So that's not stuff that they schedule. It just happens to be what happened. So because of that, it just happened to be the one year I'm there by myself. Okay, guess what? I got autographs and pictures with these guys, and my friends missed out because they suck. so, you know, just keep that in mind. Just make sure you know where you are, and at the same time, Walmart, like Martin says, cash is king. Absolutely. And because cash is king, keep your wallet somewhere where it can't get lifted off you. You will be in constant physical contact with somebody on the floor at all times. Whether you know them or not, that floor is so crowded, you are guaranteed to be touching somebody 9 out of 10 hours, you know, the entire day that you're there. You're going to be touching somebody. So make sure your wallet is somewhere where you know where it's at and it's safe and secure, and your money and your credit card and your ID. All that, you know, important information is kept close on you and where you know it, where it's at all times.
Very good. Yeah, that's a very good point. I didn't even think about that. Yeah. And if you can secure some of the, you know, don't bring all the cash all the time. If you're going to bring a lot, that's very dangerous. A lot of people also talk about keep like a pocket maybe underneath your shirt or something, one of those travel wallets.
Right.
That put some of it in there and put some in your wallet.
You know, something. You just gotta, and I don't want to say, you know, Comic-Con is full of dirty thieves or anything like
right.
that. Not at all. But you know what? If I come across somebody's wallet that's sticking out and you see a couple $100 bills sticking out of their pocket, who knows? Maybe I'll grab it. I haven't had a decent meal in a few days. I just ate at the strip club and at Dick's Last Resort. I'm poor. And there's that Hellboy figure I want. So,
yeah.
That's what I'm saying. You want to avoid temptation or help avoid temptation from other people. Just keep what's important to you close. So that's all I have to say about the stuff about Comic-Con. Like Martin said, if beware, the floor is 150,000 tickets sold. The floor of con is going to be insane. If you're wearing costumes, please be aware of your surroundings. Don't bring a 12-foot sword onto the floor of Khan and expect not to get dirty looks or get punched in the face, because the minute that sword taps anybody in the shoulder, smacks some kid in the eye or something like that, it's just going to get ugly. So be mindful of that. Be mindful of the fact that you're surrounded by 150,000 people that are touching you. You're going to sweat. You're going to get germs on you. You're going to get feel funky. You just, you know, go comfortable. If you're going to dress in costume, more power to you. I have the utmost respect for people that dress in costume that go to con. You guys are ballsier than I ever can be. The only costume I wear is my fat suit, and I can't take that off. So I understand, you know, what you guys wear is, you know, amazing and great, but just be mindful of where you are. You're at con. You're surrounded by people that you don't know and don't care about you. So be mindful of the, I don't know, accoutrement that you bring with it. The swords, weapons, guns, knives, any of that stuff that, you know, go with your costume to show off who you are. Just be mindful of it, because you don't want to accidentally hurt somebody or cause harm to yourself in that manner. And at the same time, well, like you said, there's 150,000 people on the floor. There's going to be at least another 100,000 outside, crowding up the streets, going to all the outside events that are going on, stuff that you don't need passes for, you know, stuff like that. So just be mindful of that and be prepared for it. Because if you walk in there, it's your first time. And I've seen a lot of convergents walk in, and they freak out the minute they get on the trolley because it's so crowded. And the minute the doors open, they see the crowd that they're walking into. It's even worse for them. They have no idea what to do or where to go. If you're going for the first time, go with someone that's been there before. Let them be your guide, at least for the first couple of days, so they can show you what's up, where's what's this. You know, everybody has their own secret little stash. I have my own bathroom that nobody ever uses that I know where it's at, so that's where I go to, and my own little smoke spot where it's constantly in the shade and nobody's ever there. So I know these little hidden places to go to. Find someone else that does that so you can... Yeah. You know, just
make friends.
Just be comfortable. And don't be afraid to talk to people next to you. One of the greatest things about WonderCon that I loved was it was full of like-minded individuals, and yeah, I could stop anybody in the aisle and talk to them about something, and they knew exactly what I meant. Comic-Con is a little bit different because there's just so many people, and it's so intimidating. But don't be afraid to talk to people. You bump into someone, hey, man, I'm sorry. Or, hey, check this out. Isn't this awesome? You see somebody looking at the same thing you are? We're all there for the same reason, and that's to get out of our mom's basement. So why don't I use that time to meet people and create friends and have fun? Con's all about having fun, not just, you know, Twilight.
Yes, definitely. And so everybody knows, Twilight's the very first panel in Hall H on Thursday, so it will be in first and out first and out of the way, hopefully, for the con.
Yep, so... That's all the advice I have, Martin.
Yeah, the last thing the only other thing I think I would say, and you really touched on it a lot, was be adaptable. There's no way that anything's going to work out 100% the way you planned it. Be adaptable.
And one last friendly bit of advice that I really shouldn't be giving out because it kind of messes us up, or more to the point, messes Martin up. If you're going to go to a panel, go two panels beforehand, because that line is going to be insane. You're not going to get into the panel that you want to. Plan your day around the panels you want to go to and make sure you get there in plenty of time to be able to get in. Because the last thing you want to do is get in line for a panel and get stopped three people before they shut the doors and you've been just wasted your entire day. Get there at least, I'd say, two panels maximum before your panel starts so you can guarantee that you can get in and get a comfortable seat and be able to see what you want. And again, buddy system. Buddy system always works in that aspect.
Definitely. Always have your Comic-Con safety buddy.
Yep.
You don't have to hold hands like AJ and I do, but definitely have a safety buddy.
And on that note...
Now, time for a break.
Time for a quick break. Though I just want to say something real quick. I'm watching the Twitter feed, and J. Scott Campbell just popped up. I was just thinking... There aren't nearly enough different posters for The Dark Knight Rises with the hashtag of, yes, I am being sarcastic. I just wanted to share that with everybody. Let's go ahead and take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Justin White with Necrosapien Press. Why don't you come down and check out the website at necrosapien.net. You can see all my latest artwork and projects, and we'll have a store up soon where you can buy prints of my art. Thanks.
Welcome back to the panel cast, everybody. Okay, in this segment, Martin and I are going to talk a little bit about the comic books that we've been reading this week. One comic book we did want to talk about real quick was The Cape, 1969. Now, Martin and I, neither one of us have had a chance to read this book yet. However, we were huge fans of the first Cape that came out, written by Joe Hill. And so because of that, we're very excited to read this next issue that's come out. Again, we just haven't had the chance to, but as soon as we do, we'll review it. We'll probably talk about it on the next podcast. So if you haven't read it, go pick it up, check it out, read it, maybe let us know what you think. And then when we pop on to do the review, we can read some reviewer email. That'd be kind of cool.
And to clarify, it's The Cape 1969 is this new series that's just starting.
Written by Joe Hill, son of Stephen King, and not part of the Marvel Now line.
He's famous for Lock and Key as well, which we've all hopefully read if you're listening to this podcast. And it's the first series, like AJ was saying, was a great story. So I'm definitely interested to see this, which takes place before that series. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
It has nothing to do with that crappy TV series that was on NBC, ABC, whatever. One of those channels with a C in its name. Nothing to do with it whatsoever. But what we did read was The Crow, Death and Rebirth. Chapter 1, Death is My Dojo. For those of you who don't know, actually, let me slide this over to Martin because I'm tired of talking. Martin, why don't you lead us into this?
So The Crow is being – basically, it's a rebooting of the comic books here in conjunction with the new movie that's being worked on. It's being released by IDW Publishing. It comes out, I want to say, July 11th, next Wednesday. Right?
Yes.
And we got our hands on a copy a little bit early to review. And it was interesting. You and I were there reading it in the same venue.
Holding hands.
And yes, safety buddies. Safety buddies, always, all times.
Yep.
That Judge Dredd poster could pop up anywhere. And so we were looking at it, and the first thing I said when looking at a couple of the extra covers for it, one of the variant covers, was this looks exactly like the original comic book. So when I'm going into this book, I'm thinking, oh man, this is going to be just a reprint of the old book, and they're just trying to build up some interest in this story for when the movie comes out. And then as you're reading through it, I started to realize that it isn't the same book. It's modernized, sort of, but it has the same art look to the original comic book. It looks like it was made back before the 2000s, and drawn that way. And so that was kind of a cool effect, I think, to have on it and to have with the atmosphere of that story, is to have that look to it instead of some sharp, vibrant colored edges that we see in a lot of the new big publisher books these days.
I don't know. I kind of want to disagree with that. It's kind of like the Watchmen thing, you know, like if they're going to rehash it, then it should have a new look to it or something. It shouldn't be the same thing over and over and over and over again. So, I don't know. I don't know how I feel about that one.
Well, if they're going to bring it back out, I don't want to see – if they're going to do it all new, I wouldn't want to see it in a same style as, say
– Did that scare you, Martin?
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay.
Why you got to keep playing that thing, man? Safety buddies. What did they say in TED? Thunder buddies?
Thunder buddies, yep.
But they, you know, it maybe if they did it as an anime, that might be a different way to look at it. I liked the way that it looked with its – it's the modern take on the story, just with that different look. And it takes place in Tokyo, which is really cool. It's an American who becomes the Crow, obviously, as part of the story. I don't want to give away too much of what happens in it. I didn't think that the story – played out very well. I think there were a lot of, like, they chopped a bunch of panels out of the middle of the story or about the end, maybe, or in the beginning. Like, they jumped. I think that was the term you used. They seemed to jump around in the story.
Yeah, it felt very rushed. I mean, it felt like you said, that they forgot something or they left stuff out. Or they were just, you know, hoping that the reader would be able to fill in the blanks with their imagination, which can work in some cases. But I think when it comes to comic books and stories, I mean, you know, I've said many a times, a good artist can tell the story with sequential art. A good writer can tell the story without the art at all. However, it felt to me that the artist and the writer decided, screw that part, let's just skip over it. They'll figure it out. You know, and because of that, because of the lack of good sequential storytelling in the artwork and the story, it just felt like they were skipping ahead, like someone hit fast forward real quick.
It was like almost, oh, the fans will have already have heard of The Crow. They'll know the story. They know how it works. So we're just going to kind of jump
by
off.
By now, they're as bored reading it as I am writing it or something, you know?
Yeah. And so here he's The Crow. And they didn't really show him much as The Crow. There was the one frame at the end that he's suddenly The Crow.
Right.
There was no
and it took three panels for him to be The Crow. Only three panels. There's no, like, he died, blah, 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 this happened. No, he died, he got absorbed into the fucking grave, and now he's The Crow. It made no sense to me.
The other thing that was interesting, going through it, the story of The Crow. You know, they mention it in two or three little parts about the Crow has some, maybe not religious, but mystical relations and ideas and symbology,
like part of
and
the
things
Japanese
like that.
Folklore and
right.
Stories, yeah.
And so there was a little bit of that, but there wasn't much, and there wasn't a story of how it brings people back from the dead. There was none of that related in there, and it just kind of it rushed it is a good way to say it. Yeah, they jumped straight to him being the Crow. What I wonder is, because this was the first issue, maybe they're just trying to give tidbits, and then maybe they'll do flashbacks like we see on a lot of TV shows now, where they kind of get you to they catch you up to the present really fast, and then they jump back, and the first two pages of every book will talk about his transformation of the Crow or what the Crow can do. Or
well, I just
like
wonder
that.
If they're going to relate this to any of the other previous Crow stories at all. Like, you know, always the Crow. Well, let's do some research. Well, this popped up in this time, and this popped up in that time, and blah, 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 blah. You know, so I wonder if they're going to just touch base on that at all, or if they're just going to fast forward and be like, well, you guys know it's the Crow. Fuck it. Moving on.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't know. The book was written by John Shirley and art by Kevin Colden. Martin loved the art. I thought it was insulting, honestly. I thought, you know, it's one thing to pay homage to James O'Barr and the book he wrote and the art and what's stuff in it, but it's another thing just to completely copy it in hopes of attracting the same fans in that manner. You know, it's kind of like, well, you guys are used to this style of art, so why change it? Let's just make it something that you're used to, then you'll forgive the gaps in the storyline.
Yeah, that doesn't forgive the gaps in the storyline.
That's how I felt.
Yeah, no, but that makes sense. I see what you're saying, yeah.
And I'm not saying that the book is bad. It could grow into be one of my favorite books of all times. It could be, and I could grow taller. so this is one of those books where we're just going to have to wait. But this first issue, I'm not impressed with. You know, you talk about flashbacks, and that's what this first issue felt like. Like it was a flashback. Like in issue number two, you know, the Crow's going to wake up and be like, and that's how I became the Crow. And then, you know, he moves on from there. Maybe then it'll be a good coherent storyline or whatnot. But this issue jumped around so much that I just couldn't enjoy it. You know, rivalries are suddenly forgiven and they're suddenly best friends. And there's no, I don't know, there's no backstory. There's no reason for me to care other than the fact that it was called The Crow. So, you know, and that's sad because I was excited. I was like, oh, The Crow is back out. Oh, but James O'Barr isn't doing it? Okay, well, I'll give it a shot anyway. Oh, what the hell was I thinking? Why don't I just watch another crappy movie with James Boreanaz in it?
Yeah.
You know, that would be kind of fun. Or Eric Mabius, that'd be great too. Yay.
Yeah, and it's from the writer who's doing the movie, working on the movie, which I'm hoping that they're, you know, maybe he's trying to avoid giving away stuff from the movie.
And if that's the case, then why put out the comic book?
Right. Like, are they just trying to hold the title rights? What's going on over there? There was a lot introduced in this first book for it to be that short and that fast.
Right.
You know, they talk a lot about there were spirits. We see who could possibly be a bunch of bad guys. We see a father-like figure. We see a friend. The Crow we finally see. The Blackbirds are all over the place. I mean, I think I saw them on every page.
And katanas,
yes. There were a lot of katanas. So now we know where the fighting skills come from for the Crow. I'm reading that. And it seems like there was a whole bunch put into it, but then it wasn't explained very well in this short first book. Maybe they should have made it a little bit bigger book for the first one. And like you're saying, part two, maybe we'll kind of finish out the rest of this story and then make the whole series better as it goes on. But maybe they should have put those first two parts together into one book.
Right. It just felt like the crappiest zero issue I've ever read. It felt like that they take assumptions on the fact that the fans of The Crow are going to pick it up just for the title, much like I did, and automatically understand what's going on. You know, with the quick how he became the Crow story, And then maybe in issue two, they just go into the full-on action and all the other stuff that happens now that he is the Crow. You know, which has always failed in the movies when they tried to do the sequels. It always failed. The best thing about the first Crow when it came out, the movie-wise, is that it gave so much of the backstory. It made you care about this character and why he was doing this. He wasn't just like some vengeful spirit. He actually loved this girl for, you felt it and you wanted to be there. You rooted for this guy. In this story so far, I could care less. It's some white boy with powers in Japan. Ooh, and I hope that they fix it in the next two issues. Martin and I normally give things about three or four issues before we, pass official judgment on it, but I'm hoping that in that time they come correct and they fix everything that is wrong with this one. It felt like, oh crap, we got a deadline. But here, take this.
Yeah. So definitely, we'll go through three issues, but I'm just hoping for better.
Yeah, as am I.
After that book, I don't, Avengers versus X-Men seemed kind of good
Not really.
this week. And that's still not saying much for Avengers versus X-Men. It's just prettier colors, maybe. So Avengers versus X-Men headed into round seven this week,
Right.
and we now have five characters who have taken on pieces of the Phoenix, because Hope Summers was prevented from taking on the Phoenix by the Avengers, and these X-Men are out changing the world, and doing things for the world, showing mankind that they can do good things with their powers, and they're not out to ruin them or be anything bad or destroy the human
With the
race.
exception of killing the Scarlet Witch, that has to be taken care of first and foremost. We're all about good, but fuck this bitch. We're taking her out.
And that, the internal fight between the Avengers versus X-Men, the first thing I thought when they came out with this idea was, oh, it's another Civil War and they're just doing this, and as you've said before, they're going to kill some no names and then everything's going to go back to hunky dory.
Right.
And
Or
it's
Marvel
definitely
now.
going on in terms of Avengers versus X-Men. It doesn't seem like there was going to be a lot of killing and a lot of fighting. We saw at the end of six, Cyclops says that it's time for the Avengers to be stopped for good. And with that going into seven, I'm hoping for a whole lot more, and I'm still not feeling it.
Well, have you been
I
reading
was
the side
hoping
stories of this?
the I've only read the first issue of the AVXs where it showed the special fights,
Which is stupid,
and
by
I
the way.
strictly bought it because of the fights pictured on the front page on the cover,
Yeah,
and
I
then
thought it
open the
was
book.
completely ridiculous, that stuff.
It was just another way to get me to pay $4 for a book.
Right.
I stopped buying them after the first one. I'm gonna wait. I'll try and get them digitally maybe, but it just wasn't worth it for me to go through and to read them. I was paying $4 to kind of look at a pretty cover, and then I read a story and was disappointed. I wasn't thrilled with it.
Well, what you
So
need to
why?
read, though, the one redeeming factor of AVX, as horrible of a story that it is, and as I don't know, it just seems like a complete waste of time to me in that aspect. Though I seem to keep reading it for some reason, praying that it gets better, is the new Avengers storyline, where it focuses on the Kun Lun prophecy, which is Kun Lun is the how do you say it? Is the is what the Iron Fist studies. It's the discipline that the Iron Fist studies. And in this hidden city where Iron Fist studied at, they have been training a girl to take the Phoenix Force on herself. And so 4 issues of the New Avengers goes from the beginning of this girl's them finding this girl and raising her and training her so that when the Phoenix Force comes, she can absorb it and actually have the discipline within her mind and body to use the Phoenix Force for good, as opposed to be overtaken by its evil and its power. So that storyline is actually some of the best storylines that's come out due to the AVIX. Everything else is crap, though. So
Yeah, and see, that makes sense. That should be in the AVX titles. I want to see that. But of course, you can't sell multiple story series if you put it all in the main book. So I guess it makes sense to put over New Avengers. But I just, from what I've read in AVX, I don't want to go buy the extra issues and the side issues and stories like that. Especially knowing that Marvel Now is coming out, I want to just stay with AVX and just, you know, finish it out. It's 12 books, get through it, whatever, and be done with it. And then they're going to reboot the whole universe anyways. Who cares?
Right. Well, at that point, I mean, if it's not like Flashpoint, which ties in, you know, what happens before to what's going to happen now, then there's no point. I mean, AVX, they're saying Marvel Now is a direct result of what happens in AVX, but I don't care.
They said that about Flashpoint, like you were just saying, and bits and pieces. I'll say bits and pieces were in DC 52, but Flashpoint, it's kind of like, hey, it happened. Everyone's kind of forgotten about it. Unless we refer back to it somewhere, which the Trinity War has been rumored to happen in the DC universe and refer back to that, but not very much, and I doubt it's going to do much. It's just the idea that they're trying to validate Flashpoint by saying that. And I think that's what they're going to end up doing about AVX. They're going to validate its existence just so they could relaunch the universe. Hey, we were just distracting you for 6 months so right. that we could bring Jean Grey back and give Nick Fury a new look.
Speaking about DC, now you have to be excited in the fact that John Layman is coming over to write for is it DC he's writing for? Yeah, The Dark Knight.
Yeah, for Dark Knight. And I am very excited about that. Don't get me wrong, I like all the writers that are working on the Batman books right now, save for Batwoman and Batwing. I'm still not big fans of those two books, but the DC 52, the one sets of books that I have stuck with the whole time has been Batman.
Batman, Robin, The Dark Knight, Batman The Dark Knight Continues, or The Legend Continues, or some shit.
Yeah, Batman Inc., there's Birds of Prey, Nightwing, all of these books, and they just had this great Court of Owls arc that went on, and it was awesome. The art's great, the story was cool. It's kept me interested the entire time, and going up into September, I'm actually looking forward to continue reading it past its 12-issue mark. And to see where they go forward with it. The biggest hint, we were talking about this in the last episode, was the Joker's coming back in issue 13. And how's that going to affect the Batman universe and all that? So it's very cool. And then to have somebody from Image Comics, John Layman, who does Chew over there and has done a great job with it. That's one of my favorite series that I read in comics now. To be coming over to Batman is very interesting to me. For those who read Chew, it's dark, but it's a campy dark.
She was awesome.
It's not a Batman kind of dark story.
No, and we've had Layman and Gilroy on the show before too. So talking right. about Chew, and you know we can't rave enough about how good the series is. So the fact that he's moving over to the Dark Knight is kind of cool. I can't wait to see what happens with that one. But do you think that means that Batman's going to be a little bit more vocal, a little bit more cheesy in his conversations, and a little more Spider-Man?
I was gonna say, I don't know, is he gonna be like Spider-Man with the smart comments? But we have a character who already does that in the Batman books, and I'm wondering if DC tends to control their writers and artists a little bit more than I think Image does with Chew and things like that. So I'm wondering what will come past the editor's table.
Well, you know, and a side note here, I'm going to pop a little secret for those of you out there in the comic world that don't know and don't understand this. If you don't want to know, then, you know, fast forward on. If you do want to know, keep listening. Image Comics, Image doesn't actually create or own those titles. Image Comics are creator-owned comics. So they don't necessarily dictate the stories or how they go, much less create them. So it'd be like, you know, Justin and I pitching ZKS to Image Comics and them saying, okay, here's some money, here's this, we're going to go ahead and publish you and put you out, but at the same time, it's all you and whatever you create. So that's how Image Comics works, whereas DC Comics, they actually own their characters. DC, you know, Batman, Flash, Superman, all that stuff. So they can dictate the line, you know, the timeline and the storyline that they go on. So John Layman would have had to go, oh, you guys need a new writer? Here's my pitch for where I want to take Batman. Is that okay? And they'll say, okay, make this change, make this change, make this change. Here you go. You're good. You're hired. Let's go. So that's the difference between Marvel and DC and Image Comics. So there you go. There's your little secret right there.
So with that, you know, what I think they would control a little bit more of that. I do expect it to be an interesting storyline in terms of how he builds it up. John Layman and Chu, I read those books and I get so mad at the end, at the last page, because I got to wait a damn month for another book to come out. Stupid 30 days between these issues, and it drives me crazy. He did issue 27
twice.
Last April 2011, he put out issue 27. It was a one year later issue. I had to wait all the way until this past month to get the current issue 27 in the right timeline, and then I'm going to have to wait another month before issue 28. You know, like, it's – so I still don't know what's going on with that issue that I read a year ago. And so there's things like that where he really builds you up in a story, and you want the next piece. And I think he's going to bring that to Batman. And that's okay, because that's one of those things in Batman that I think is a good part. You know, that Batman is a detective. He has these mysteries he's going to be solving. And you bring up these puzzle pieces of a story together, and you start to kind of leave people hanging at the end of every issue. It'll be bringing them back a lot faster. Not that they need to do that now, but it'll just be a nice trait he'll bring to the story.
Yep. Well, you know, here's to hoping. John Layman, he's a great writer. I love Chu, so I'm hoping that the Dark
Knight...
I'll
be stalking him next week to find out what I can.
There's no stalking. I'll just introduce you to him.
Oh, okay.
Moving on. I'll be excited to see if the Dark Knight does indeed continue to be one of the few DC titles I purchase and read. So yeah, that'd be kind of cool. And I think with that, we're going to go ahead and wrap up this episode. Martin, did you have anything else you wanted to say?
Looking forward to Comic-Con, and we've got one more big event before we even get down there, right?
Right, we are doing
speaking of comics,
the 100th issue release party of The Walking Dead this Tuesday at midnight over at Four Color Fantasies. It's going to be kind of a crazy event in that, you know, it comes so late at midnight, and then we have to wake up so early the next morning to run on down and get our passes for Comic-Con, and then deal with Comic-Con. But at the same time, you'll get us exhausted and tired, so you'll probably get the truth out of us. But it is an exciting event that's going on. The 100th issue of The Walking Dead, I've been following it since, like, not the third issue, I think. So kind of excited to see that happen.
And that'll be fun, and we'll broadcast from there, which will be cool. And then we're headed to Comic-Con, so... with that, I'll say goodbye.
And I will say goodbye as well. The trick next week, you'll want to tune in, because there's a good chance we may get Chris Brady on the show. Shh, he doesn't know that yet. I'll see you guys on the next episode on the Road to 100.
Panelcast is brought to you by Forbidden Panel. Please visit us at www.forbiddenpanel.com.